Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories.
Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharicana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. Thank you for joining us. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Today, we are joined by our guest, Rodney Sam.
Rodney Sam is a graduate of Prairie View A&M University. His family has deep Louisiana Creole roots that extend to the beginning of the colony. He is passionate regarding learning the history, genealogy, and culture of his Louisiana Creole ancestors, including his paternal seventh great-grandmother, his oldest known ancestor of African descent. Rodney is an expert on the history of Creoles in St. Landry and Evangeline Parish. Currently, he is a library services specialist for the Clayton Library Center for Genealogical Research in Houston, one of the top genealogy research centers in the country. He is also a frequent poster on Our Black Ancestry's Facebook page, which is how we met. Welcome to Speak On It, Rodney.
Hello. How are you guys doing today? I'm glad to be on the show.
Oh, thank you. We're happy to have you. We're going to go ahead and get started. And so, Rodney, our first question, we'd like for you to share with our listeners how long you have researched your family history and what led you to begin your genealogy journey.
I've been doing it for over 20 years now. So when I was maybe like 18 and 19, I remember watching the television series Roots, you know, written by Alex Haley.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Watching the show, it made me want to be curious, like, who are my ancestors too? So after watching that show, I started buying all these books about how to do African-American genealogy. So I went through the books, and I kind of followed the steps. Like, I talked to the oldest family members I could find and everything, and that's kind of how it started. You know, all those years ago, I was maybe like 20 years old. I was a kid, so it's been a good 20-year journey, I would say.
Wow, that's awesome.
Thanks. So, Rodney, how did you discover or learn about your seventh great-grandmother?
Ooh, wow, that's a good question. well, this is on my dad's side. So when I began researching my dad's father's side, I realized, well, when I first started doing his side, I got back pretty far pretty easily. And
mm-hmm.
It started when I realized that my dad's ancestors were free persons of color. And I was shocked because I thought all my ancestors were slaves, so they kind of started with that.
Right.
And as I started tracing back further and further, and I started wondering, like, when were my ancestors slaves and how did they become free? So that's kind of how it started. And then when I kept going, I came across an ancestor who had this name, Mossy, you know, in the records, you know. So in every person, and I started looking up every person named Mossy out of curiosity, and they were all
mm-hmm.
like free people in the records. And then I eventually kept digging, and I realized all these people with the name were all connected. They all came from the same plantation of this earlier slave owner in the area that came to Louisiana in the 1740s, I guess. And I realized that there was a slave named Marie on there. She's from Africa, and I didn't know she was related to him at the time. It was only 2 years later that I realized she was related. When DNA came in, I started getting DNA matches, and then I started, like, researching DNA matches, and then I kept finding all kind of records and stuff like that. It was a long process. So I realized that I was related to her when, one, the DNA matches, and then I started researching
right.
them. And then I found a will that she made that she named my ancestors one of her kids. So that kind of
okay.
started. It's a lot, you know.
Yeah, so we'll definitely touch on the will. But, you know, you mentioned her name. You know, she's listed as Marie Senegal. Can you share why she's listed as such?
Well, okay, well, in the original, like, she was baptized, like, in 1756. Mm-hmm. So in the original record, it's in French. It says Marie Nation, signal in French, means, like, for the Senegal Nation. And that was
right.
the big ethnic identifier that a lot of the earlier French recorders used to denote Africans of that nation. So it's kind of vague on where Senegal is, but usually it's that Senegal can be an area because the
mm-hmm.
early French they preferred slaves that was from that area who were Yolo or Fulani. So Senegal means she's from that region. So I don't
right.
know
okay.
whether she was, you know, so that's kind of what it is. That means she's a of that ethnic group of the, you know, the nation at least at that time. So
that's exciting. Very, very cool.
During a previous conversation, Rodney, you noted that Catholic records are an excellent resource to research. Please explain why and some of the resources that can be helpful while conducting genealogy research, for example, baptismal records.
Catholic records are very excellent because they provide a biographical detail on each of the people. Like, for example, if you look at the record, it includes the name of the person being baptized, their date of birth and date of baptism. It names the parents and the maiden name of the mother, if known, and it also includes the godparents and godmother who were usually relatives or friends of the family. So they're generally connected to people, and includes slaves were baptized in the Catholic Church. So you have names of slaves and their birth dates, and also
wow.
they were married too. So you could find marriages of slaves in some of the records too as well. So, and if you have Catholic records, you can literally trace your family through several generations going from one record to the next, especially if they were Catholic through seven generations. So you could literally go to like 1870 or 1865 pretty easily if your ancestors were also Catholics. You can find them pretty easy because they pretty much almost list the parents. So you can reconstruct your family history just by using those records alone, really.
Are they online? Are the records online, or did you actually go to the parish?
I mean, it depends. I know in New Orleans, they have the Diocese of New Orleans. They have, like, their website. They have some of their old colonial Catholic records. So, and also, Family Search has quite a bit. It depends. I know for Texas, for example, they have some Catholic records of different counties, like of Catholic churches that were like founded by mostly people from Louisiana. So
mm-hmm.
you can find like some of that on there. So, and then there's others, I don't know, some of it is not online and some of it is. I know like the South of Louisiana Records is a collection made by a priest in Louisiana. You can find that usually at some genealogical library. So it's some.
Mm-hmm.
Some are online, some are in published book form. And some you have to literally
right.
go to the archive. So
mm-hmm. that's
yeah.
what I was
mm-hmm.
going to ask you next. Have you actually been there? Have you ever, you know, have you done a little bit of both, research there physically or only online?
I've done stuff like I went to the courthouse and did some digging.
Cool.
And I've also contacted. Well, actually, a lot of this stuff actually is online. It's so. I would say I used to call like churches and stuff back then, and they send me like baptism
mm-hmm.
records, or I go to the archives. So it's really I never really had to go in person there because a lot of times it was either on the telephone or it was online, or they have like a state archive that they can just send digital scans. So they made it more accessible, you know, as far as like you're able to acquire Catholic records without having to physically go there, especially in parts of Louisiana where a lot of the genealogy records, a lot of it is still in a courthouse or in an archive. So,
okay.
Very cool.
And the before
nice resource.
Before we move on, just are the records legible? Like, is it hard to read them? Are they in different languages?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're in different languages. They're in all three languages. There are some in English, some in French, and some in Spanish.
Okay.
I mean, for example, my great-grandfather's baptism record is in French, and he was born in 1900. So, and some of them are not legible. Like I said, a lot of these records date from the 18th century. And
yeah.
And I've had help from people to help translate certain things for me, especially the ones that are very hard to read. But usually
okay.
You can pick out key phrases that I know to look for, like son of, daughter of, or, you know, like that, or to have,
right.
Yeah, color descriptions like free mulatto or free, you know, they have different descriptors for people who are, like, of color, of different complexions and everything, so.
That's a really good question, because it definitely opens up another conversation about, yeah, language, you know.
Yeah,
and
so
having,
you're dealing with three different
that,
languages
yeah.
in Louisiana. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So to our listeners, if you're doing Louisiana research, definitely be prepared for having to either brush up on Spanish and French or find a translator.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, because some of it is like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, like, because some of the colonial stuff, it's almost like sometimes you have to have a historian that can help you out too sometimes, or someone that can, like,
mm-hmm.
understand the context of the what works are found that can help you interpret it. So, because, you know, you're dealing with, like, historical records as well, too. So it's kind of.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a lot, you know.
Good tips. So, Rodney, you mentioned a will. You mentioned Marie wrote her will. But in your research, did you find Marie listed in a will? But, you know, emancipation and, you know, did she marry and have children?
Yes, well, she, the oldest church in Southwest Louisiana is St. Martin du Tours. It's in St. Martinville. And the
mm-hmm.
first entry in there is of her baptism and her marriage from 1756. She married a Mende guy. He was an African. That was his first marriage she married. And some of the kids
wow.
that you have with them, they're baptized. Their baptisms appear in the old Catholic registers. And the story about, now, she was emancipated. Like, you know, the man who held in slavery, he freed all of his slaves before he died. He freed every last one of them. And,
wow.
Yeah. And a friend of mine, that was all. Well, we can never, like, me and my friend of mine was trying to, like, figure out the original, how she became free. It took a long time to figure out, but it was in a land dispute, maybe like almost 100 years later. By the descendants.
Wow.
Yeah, see, the slave owner was a man named Andre Massey, and he had a business partner. Well, the descendants
mm-hmm.
of the business partner had a land dispute almost a century later. And within the land dispute, they referenced the lost will that the slave owner made before he died, freeing her. She was emancipated, and he listed her name. And her children.
Mm-hmm.
He listed all the families of the slaves that he freed and their family groups. So she was emancipated
wow.
in 1769. Yeah, he said, this is the mother, this is the son, this is the grandkids. This is the mother of this group. And he listed all the family relationships because he pretty much, he said they were all like united into one family. So that's kind of what he said. So she was freed
wow.
along with her son in 1769. Yeah, it's a very unique type record. And so she was emancipated in 1769, and when I was looking through some of the St. Martinville archives online, digital, I found her will. She made a will in 1775.
Wow.
And when I had someone translate it, she was up there in 8 or 10 or 70s. And when I had somebody translate it, basically said that she was getting up there in age and she wanted to leave whatever property she had left to her two adult children and two grandchildren of her deceased daughters. So basically she listed the two kids, the adult children, and Marie was one of the ones she listed, and that was my ancestors. And that's how I discovered my link to her. Like, I was like,
oh, wow.
Because I shared DNA with a descendant of her brother, Marie's son. So when I talked to a lady and I found it, so they actually confirmed the DNA. So she was listed in there as one of the adult kids. So she just left her – she had cattle. She had cattle, you know. That's kind of what the – you know, when the slave owner died, basically they were all like – they had cattle and stuff. That's what they did. So she left some of her cattle, and that's how I found my – that's how I confirmed my connection to her at least. But, yeah, she was up there in age, you know. She just had her will dictated, you know. And so it's pretty interesting. It's a lot, you know.
It is a lot, yeah. No. But you kind of hit a genealogy lottery.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to find, like, an African – well, actually, if you're from Louisiana and your ancestors are Louisiana Creole, the odds of you finding an African is probably higher than maybe someone from Virginia or South Carolina, because the French and Spanish, they kept more detailed records. They kept a lot of details about the ethnic identity of some of the Africans. So a lot of times you see a will where you might see a whole plantation of seven Africans. They'll list the ethnic identity of every single one of them. So,
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How far back have you traced your family history?
Well, let me see. Marie, she was born in 1699, so she's probably the oldest. And so my ancestor, her daughter was born in like 1730. So I would say 18th century on some sides. Yeah, on my dad's side, well into the 18th century. So.
Okay. And during our conversation earlier, you spoke about the indigenous tribe, to Louisiana. Do you have information that you could share briefly before we move on?
Okay, yes. Well,
I think it was the Chitimacha. You can say it better than I can.
the Chitimacha. They're a Native American tribe. They live around Carrington in St. Mary Parish. And what's interesting about them is, all these slaves, my ancestors, they were all part of the Mossi, like, estate. So where they were, you know, where his farm was and stuff, where they were like slaves, isn't far from the original settlement of the Chitimacas, like, nation. So basically the Mossi slaves interacted with Chitimaca Native Americans of that area, and over time they intermarried. So like one of Marie's of Africa, her son Andre, he married two Native American women. And he had kids by the second wife, and their descendants form part of the Chitimaca tribe today. So I'm definitely related to some of them because we have a shared African ancestor. So,
right.
So they just kind of assimilated. I mean, there's even I came across an anthropology journal from the 1880s where this anthropologist, he traveled to Louisiana to study the Chitimaca language and culture. And one of the informants who knew most about it was a black man named Baptiste Angelique. And he spoke Chitimaca. That was like his first language. That's what he preferred to speak in. And anthropologists assumed he was a slave. And me, I was looking at it and said, I wonder if he's one of my relatives, because, like, for a man of color to speak a Native American language as his preferred language, his natural language, I couldn't imagine he probably wasn't a slave. And I was right. When I kept digging, I found out that his mother was actually my ancestor's sister.
Wow.
And he was born free, and he grew up basically in the Native American settlement. So that's how I knew so much about him, because he grew up around them. That's a
now,
side note.
The tribe, is it spelled Chitimaca? Is that correct? Chitimaca. I was just thinking for our listeners. I believe that's what you gave me. I just wanted to confirm it. So.
Yeah. Let me see.
Okay. And then.
Chitimaca.
Chitimaca. Mm-hmm. And that's indigenous to Louisiana, you said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're one of the several tribes that live in Louisiana besides the Cato and the. You know, in the Cushata, so the Chitimacas are more towards St. Mary, so yes.
Okay. Have you connected with anyone? Have you spoken to anyone from that tribe?
I've emailed, well, the one lady, the one I mentioned earlier with the DNA connection, she's actually, her dad was actually Chitimaka, so.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yeah, so, and I kind of helped her basically solve her brick wall, because I found her answer.
Very cool.
When I found her answer, I found her answer's will, and it listed all the kids, all the heirs. I'm like, it listed your grandfather's parents you were looking for. And but yeah, she was a Chitimaka, and they're very mixed. Like a lot of Chitimakas, they have a lot of European ancestry too, and they have some African. So they mixed in with all those people over the years. So that's another thing about. But they got their identity really maternally, because the Native American women either had children by a European guy or they had children by an African guy. So became members of the tribe. So yeah.
Okay, so we touched on our next question a little bit, but just to be thorough, have you connected with other researchers who are descendants of your seventh great-grandmother, Marie, through DNA or via a family tree online?
Oh, yeah, both. I'm friends with some of them on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Some of them show up as DNA matches. I became friends with some of them on Facebook, Ancestry. Oh, yeah, I mean, they were kind of shocked. They didn't know either. I mean, they knew a little, but they didn't know about her, and they was kind of surprised. So, yeah, a bunch of them. I mean, they live everywhere. I mean, they're all kind of backgrounds. I mean, some of them are white, some of them are African-American, some of them are Creole, some of them are Indian, some of them are, you know.
Variety.
Assimilated with everybody, it's kind
of
like, yeah.
Did you find most of them, I'm so sorry, did you find most of them through DNA or through family trees?
through both. Like when I first started, it was through like Facebook and Ancestry, and then I started seeing some DNA, and it's like a mixture of all those three. Especially on Facebook, we got all these genealogy groups and stuff. A lot of them in the genealogy groups. So, I mean, she has a lot of descendants. So, and it's a ton of intermarriage too. So.
Right.
So of course.
Awesome. Okay, great. Yeah, it's, my Facebook has turned into a bit of a mini online family reunion as well. And I like it like
that.
It's
kind of like,
yeah.
Like a long lost cousin.
It's cool. It's cool. It's a great way to keep in touch and, you know, learn new stuff. So, Rodney, Louisiana culture has deep roots in the United States, but it's come into the mainstream spotlight, you know, in part, not solely because of, but in part because of a mega superstar, Beyonce, you know, particularly from her line and formation. So as someone of that lineage, though, what would you like people to know about Creole culture?
I would say, importantly, I think it's important to clear a lot of the misconceptions people have about it. For example, there's deception that Creoles equal people who are, quote-unquote, mixed and all this kind of stuff. They think it's a color thing, and also, you know, that can. I want to let people know that Creole historically was an ethnic identity that was shared by different people in Louisiana. So if all your ancestors were from Europe, you would be a Creole. If most of your ancestors were African, you would be Creole. If your ancestors were both of those, you were still Creole. So what united those people is an identity that was linked by language, by religion, you know, by culture. So it was a cultural identity that transcends the idea of, like, color and all that stuff. So an idea of how it morphed in this thing about being mixed, it started with when the Americans took over Louisiana. They were kind of freaked out about all these people who called themselves Creole who were, like, different colors and different ethnicities to them. So they had, like, people who they thought were white. Oh, I'm Creole. People thought they were black. Oh, I'm Creole. They were kind of – it was like that because they had a different culture about mixing with people and different – so it was kind of – they couldn't – it kind of confused them because when you come from a culture where everything is, like, you think in black and white, whereas Louisiana before the English, they didn't have a concept of, like, black or white, anything like that. They didn't have, like, a racial type.
Right.
It was
more culture.
So.
Right.
it was a little different. Like they didn't divide their population into black and white. It was kind of like Brazil or Puerto Rico. It was kind of like that. So I would like to at least cut that up. Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's really, really cool. Very important to clear up misconceptions for sure. And then finally, can you share, you know, with our listeners some parting words regarding researching their family history?
I would say don't give up. Stay persistent. Mm-hmm. Just keep on the hunt. I mean, sometimes it can get frustrating and challenging. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not a straight, narrow path. Sometimes you go backwards. Sometimes you go forward. Sometimes you stop for a while because you get annoyed. But you just kind of have to just keep going. Yeah, I've had times I just got frustrated. I said, I'm not going to touch this family for like 2 years, you know. So I would say that just persistent and just keep going and just, you know, it's a process. It's not a straight process. It's like it's full of turns and, you know, that kind of thing. So I would say that just keep an open mind too, because I've been surprised at what I've found, and I have to like rethink, you know, ideas that I've always thought. I was like, okay, that can't be, that's not true, or that's impossible. I had to like rethink that. So I had to question a lot of things that I've learned doing this research. So yeah, so I would say that. Those are my parting words.
Rodney,
well, thank you.
Do you have any, one second, I'm sorry. Do you have any plans to write about what you found so far?
Well, I mean,
in terms of
right,
publishing
last,
anything?
Mm-hmm. I've been saying that for the last 10 years. I mean, I mean, yeah, I would like to. I want to. I just have to sit there and say, okay, I'm going to do it. Let's do it. But yeah, of course. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot. I mean,
yeah, you need to, because you know a lot.
I can write a whole book
about
it. Each question you gave me, I can literally say all kind of stuff about it.
There you go. The start is right there. Well, Rodney, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. And if he writes a book, listeners, you can be on the lookout for, A History of Louisiana Creoles by Rodney Sam.
Yeah,
so to our listeners, thank you.
Remember, so, you know, so yeah.
Say what? Say that again?
So my name is easy to remember. Everybody remembers the name Rodney Sam for some reason.
Good point. Good point. So to our listeners, thank you for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. This show is sponsored by Bernice Bennett of Research at the National Archives and Beyond, Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.